I am really excited about this. This is a lot of information in my brain, believe it or not. I know some of you don't think there's a lot of information in this thing, but I have been digging on the life of David just in the last couple weeks regarding camp and a couple things. I was asked to speak a few weeks back in Indiana, and I was just digging on David and Goliath and the response of other people at the courageous efforts of others. Not just the courageous efforts of those, but the response that comes when people see other people doing good things. So David killed Goliath. We know the story, or maybe you don't. I mean, when I revisited that story, so that was in 1 Samuel 14, 15, 16, 17. You get to 17 with Goliath. But there's a lot of things in there that just spur me to see and watch. It's not just that David killed Goliath. For 40 days, they stood down there and let the giant taunt them. For 40 days. I've missed that. All my studying days, I never realized for weeks upon weeks, they allowed the giant to taunt them. The king was hidden in the cave. But when David slew the giant, the response of the people was amazing. The king came out of the cave. The Israelites came after the Philistines in battle. They went back to the camp and brought more of God's people. And all of a sudden, everybody's charged up and ready to go because this guy, David, stands up and says, that guy's not going to taunt my God. Okay, and I talked a lot about that with camp and even our counselors kind of getting ready. And then you get to 2 Samuel chapter 15, 16, 17, and 18. And you have all this information around Psalms chapter 3, all right? You got a lot of names that you're following. You've got Absalom, which is who? Who is Absalom to David? It's his son, okay? What's recently happened with the kingdom concerning Saul and some other things? You've been passed on, right? It's time to move past you. God has moved past you now. Why? Or how was David selected? Where did they find him? I know we know this stuff, but just really quickly, where did they have to go to get him? When they're looking for who they're going to anoint, where was David? He's out keeping the sheep. And the guy's thinking, surely it's just going to show himself to me when I go there to meet the sons of this guy. And it just didn't happen. It didn't happen. And they bring in David. And he finds out, what was God looking for that maybe man is not always looking for? And I know, again, this is stuff you know, but I just want to hear it from us. Make sure our brains are aware. What was he looking for? He was looking at the heart, right? He was looking at the heart of David. We can't, for time's sake, read chapters 15, 16, 17, and 18. I obviously had to do that, and glad I got to do that, and getting ready for this. Some great things in those chapters about David. One that just kind of stomped in my heart and just rang every time I came back across it. David, just so you know, if you don't know, he's being pursued, he's being run out of office by his own son. It gives me chills to think that a father and a son could have any type of such relationship. And I was listening to some of the guys speak the other night at Share Night. Not everybody has a solid relationship, and some have divides between their fathers, and they know what that feels like. I don't know what that feels like. I'm sorry that some do, but I have no clue what it feels like to be at odds with your father. I have great love for my father. I have great respect for my father. I have no intention in my life of ever trying to stomp him out or run him out of any position that he's worked so hard to gain. I have no intention of overtaking anything that he's built. As a matter of fact, it's kind of the other way around. I'd like to take the things that he's built and keep them moving by way of our heritage and who we are as God's people and what we're doing. So to see a father and a son at odds to this level is just foreign to me. I understand it's not foreign to the human creation and even God's people. But to see that Absalom is running David out. And I want you to understand a little bit about how Absalom did this. Maybe I'll even just ask you, some of you, if we don't have this information in our brains, we're not going to sit here and hang in dead silence and wait till we answer it. I'll feel it if we don't know. But do you know what Absalom was doing to buy the people's power? Do you remember what he was doing? He was sitting at the gate. And as people came into the city, and they were approaching the king to have a hearing. Basically, they've got a situation. They need judgment. Absalom would rush out to the gate. He had 50 bodyguards with him. He was probably a little concerned about whether he should be trying to build himself up in his father's kingdom. It doesn't tell us all that, but I think that's why he probably did that. That's right. It looked very official. And when they would come in, he would just, hug and kiss the babies. We say that all the time. You know, hugging and kissing the babies and going around and visiting. Maybe people say that in business. But Absalom would say to them something like this. Now, the king may not have time to hear your case. He's busy. He's got a lot going on. But I'll tell you this. If I were hearing your case, Marshall, you've got a strong case. And I think I'd be on your side. And Tommy, Wiki, so-and-so, I think if I was the judge, I'd be in your favor. He was just building false. He wasn't the judge. He wasn't the king. He was just building this, everybody be happy, let's hug and kiss and just praise everyone's situation. Entitlement maybe is a word that we hear. He was just letting them know, you're entitled. And if I was in a position to make a decision, I'd be on your side. He's undermining the authoritative rule of the king, who is his father, to buy. And tells us in 2 Samuel. Again, we can't read all this in class. I encourage you to go home this week and tonight and read 15 through 18 of 2 Samuel and really get all this information. But back to the one thing I wanted to get to about David's character that I just loved. As he's being pursued, one of David's men are kind of trying to figure out what to do here. And David says, listen, you don't need to go in the situation. You're going to be endangered. You think about what you're doing as a person right now in laying down your legacy and building your platform and seeing whether or not people respect who you are. And one of David's men say in those chapters in 2 Samuel, David, you are worth 10,000 of our lives. And I just read that, and I backed up, and I read that again, and I read that again. I thought, man, what honor David had among the people. The man said, I will stay and fight, and you are not going to put yourself in danger. He could slay 10,000 of us, and it's not worth who you are as David, the man. And he was that's right. He's a great warrior. And you'll find that out. Absalom has overturned. He has success. He runs his father out. His father's on the run. Absalom has had success in winning over position and men to come with him. He pursues David. David had to obviously leave out with a remnant. You know, he had to get out of town, take some guys with him. When they engage, guess whose men are killing whose men? David's men are killing Absalom. The forest is killing a lot of them. It tells us that more died in the first engagement due to the forest. I don't know if it was just so thick or what it was, or if it was a bunch of, I don't know. It just says that more died from the forest than they died from the sword, but David's men were prevailing over Absalom. He's a warrior. You know that from 1 Samuel when you follow the life of David, and then you see this recorded in 2 Samuel, saying David's a mighty warrior. But Absalom's pursuing him and shoving him out, and then you have men like Ahithophel who are, you talk about stuck between a rock and a hard place. They were stuck. They were advisors to the king. The king has been run out of town. Now, What do I do? I mean, I'm supposed to be I'm serving the king, but the king's sort of been overthrown. I'm going with David, but I should go back maybe and advise, Absalom. I don't know. And so David says, Ahithophel, go back. And Hishua, however his name is pronounced. Or another one that goes back, somewhat I think are playing a little bit of a spy role, trying to kind of, and you'll see that, they'll send out some men back to David and say, hey, you better get going now and cross over the river. They're coming after you tonight. So some of it was maybe wisdom on David's warrior mentality to outthink his son, if you will. That usually happens. I don't know if you've ever been out thunk by your father, but I have many times and learned the hard way. You think you're young, you think you got it, you got things figured out. And because of where you are in life, you can just charge past that old guy's information and life, goes on for you. We heard a little story at camp this past week from one of the counselors. He learned the hard way that his old man was not as old as he thought he was. One of our counselors was telling about a time when he was 17 years old, had a conflict with his father, wanting to go somewhere, but his dad said he couldn't go. He kept pushing back, and to the point that he finally looked at his father. The boy was 17, his father was 57. He says his father had him later in life, so he always viewed his dad as kind of the old man. And he voiced his opinion that this family sucks to his father. And he ran out the front door. He looked over his shoulder and he saw the old man coming after him. But he was 17, this guy's 57. He said, ain't no way he's catching me. And he took off and fled around the house, and his dad grabbed him, threw him on his back, and put his elbow in his throat and gave him some information about life. He learned that the old man is not as old, and we got to understand there's wisdom in age. And maybe that's the wrong crowd to be talking to because we've got an adult crowd in here, but for those of us on the other side of this spectrum, we've got to honor this, and we have to understand David's wisdom is going to lead to Absalom's death. His death. He thought he had a wine and dine the people approach. I'll buy their power with falsified love, and I'll outthink my father. So I want you to kind of hold that information right there. Maybe I'll just give you the real quick ending. You may remember what happens, but Absalom gets stuck in a tree. And it's argued whether it was his hair or his head. Some translations say his head, his hair. I don't know the answer. Rusty Green was asking me at camp this week, was it his hair or his head? I said, man, I don't know. Mine says it was his head. Others say his hair. Absalom gets stuck. It doesn't kill him, but he gets killed. Okay, so long story short, just so you remember, Absalom did try to overthrow. He was somewhat successful. He was temporarily in power, but it led to his own death. So we have to remember, now, those of you that are in the age bracket of wisdom, you have to do your job and lead according to God's plan, because we're supposed to follow and respect your authoritative lead. So it creates kind of a situation where both parties got to be doing their job. We can't let the aged, wise people of God turn their backs on God's word and then just lead, and we say, well, they're aged and they're wise, we should follow. They should lead according to God's plan. We should all be trying to follow God's plan, but we should let the wisdom be a beneficial piece of our lives as we follow God. Yes. Oh, absolutely. That's right. Oh, absolutely. That's right. I read it out loud to Carol this week. I read it last night. Absalom's death. So you're being pursued. It is your son, but still, you're being pursued to the point of death. You can turn on somebody that you used to be close to, right? We've all seen that. Maybe you've done that. You know, internally, you know, my brother hit me in the head one time with a 4-inch hickory walnut tree and busted on my forehead and powderized on my, he launched a walnut from some guy's house. I jumped over a fence and I fell down on the other side of a 4-slatted fence, and that walnut came right through an opening and nailed me on the forehead. And my brother was just laughing about this last time we were camping. He said, "Dude, it just pulverized on your forehead." He's a big dude. He's always bigger than me. I came over the fence with the biggest stick ever, and I mean, I was going to kill my brother. You know, you can turn on your family quick in a situation. And then my dad comes out, and I get in trouble for chasing John with a stick. You know, I had to back up and tell the story. But you can turn quick. But I'm going to tell you what happened that I read to Carol that just caused tears to come down my face. When Absalom is dead and David finds out, David says, "Absalom, Absalom, oh my son, Absalom, my son, Absalom." As Tommy just said, he never let go of his deep love for his son. I hope that we're building homes that we have some value systems that are similar to David's, and he understands the love of family. And even further back a little bit in those chapters, the soldiers went out, and before they left, they remembered David saying, "Have mercy on my son, Absalom." We're in warfare. We've got a king prior, been rooted out of office in his army. We got a king current trying to take office, bringing his people. They're in warfare. And one of the men who first found Absalom stuck in the tree didn't kill him. Could have. He's stuck in a tree. And he reports back to his commanding officer and he says, "Why did you not kill Absalom?" They're in warfare. I want you to begin to reflect back on the respect that David had of other people. He said, "Sir, I remember hearing when David sent us out, he said, 'Have mercy on my son, Absalom.'" He could have been the hero of war. He could have assaulted and killed the leader of the opposing force. He had him stuck in a tree. But because of his reverence for King David, he would not do it. Now, that man went back and took 3 daggers and he killed the man. He wanted that warrior type. He just totally, to me, he just overthrew David's, "Have mercy on my son." And then when they're going to report back to David, one guy takes off leaving and he doesn't have all the information. He doesn't know exactly what's happened to Absalom. And he gets there and another guy says, "You got to go now because somebody needs to tell David what's happened." I mean, they were so honoring of David. They wanted him to know his son had been slain. And I'm hoping that that sort of kind of captures 2 Samuel 15, 16, 17, and 18. And so what I want you to think about is, who are your enemies? What are your opposing forces? I hope it's not too many people. But I got to find some way to make this applicable to us, in that we may have other things that are pressing upon us. We can understand what it means to be. I mean, David was on the run for his own life from his son, Absalom. And you read back in 1 Samuel, and then you even read here in 2 Samuel, and the words "wisely" and "chose wisely," and "he did much wise thing." The word "wise" is used with David's name over and over and over again. And because he continued to do wisely, the Lord continued to bless him. And at one moment in this abrasive friction between Absalom, he said, "Send the Ark of the Covenant back, and if Absalom will have me, fine. If he won't, then..." He's trying not to fuel the battle. Sometimes we know how to push the button of the opposing party and we relish in that. We just can't wait to say, oh, I know if I say this right now, it will send them over the top. That's not David's character. David's saying, maybe there's a moment here. If we send the ark back, they'll see something, maybe a little spiritual connection. If Absalom will chill out and we can settle this, if not, then I'll stay out here and we'll do. He didn't come into town, as Tommy's already mentioned, and say, man, I can go in there and kill my son and his people right now. I've got the experience. I've got the men. I've got the reverential respect. You fight different when you respect the man whom you're fighting for. I've talked to military people at different times in our country, and I don't need to pick different leaders, but it's been many times. I've talked to men in the army at different times and serving under different people, and they can't stand serving under men they don't respect in office. They love serving under men that they honor. It's a privilege to go out and defend for someone who you have great honor for. It's embarrassing for them. I've traveled some overseas, my dad as well. Other countries are laughing at us at times, mocking our leadership. That's hard to stand up and say, yeah, I'm a part of the U.S. military, and it's an embarrassing position to be in. Not so with David. They respected him, and they would fight for him to whatever end it took. But David tried to resist the force of war. Yes, ma'am. That's right. Exactly. That's exactly right. And he even prays, to Beverly's point, when Ahithophel, he says, Ahithophel, you go back. And he prays to God, to Beverly's point, he said, Lord, may the Lord allow Ahithophel to give Absalom foolish advice. So David didn't grab Ahithophel and say, I'm going to tell you something. You get over there and you falsify information and you put my, he didn't do that. He said, Ahithophel, you go back. And he prayed, to Beverly's point, he prayed God would allow Ahithophel to give foolish advice to Absalom. And you see what happens. He asked for the advice of Ahithophel. He asked for the advice of Hishua. And he has to make a decision between those two. He ends up with his head stuck in a tree. And he dies. So I want you to think about the things that are in opposition in your life. If it's people, and again, I hope that list is small, right? As God's people, I hope we found ways to, Tommy addressed those very principles. When the sun goes down, figure it out, right? You've probably heard me say it too many times about striking hands for the well-being of others. That was a concept in my father's home. That's just what you did. You solved it right now, and you got over it right now, and sometimes that's hard to fake. You know, because you'd smack the fire out of your brother's hand and mumble under your breath, you know, I'll get you later, man. We'll settle this. We'll look like it's good. You know, it's hard. It's hard to go, you know what? I'm good, bro. You did me wrong, and I'm game on. Let's get back to where we were. That's hard to do. But it's biblical principle. I don't know. We have so many problems, and we have opposing forces that honestly, I think if we could just strike hands and you stand up and act like Jesus and I'm going to act like Jesus, it should go away. But it just isn't easy. But David, in his pursuit to the point of death, was willing at any moment to stop and strike hands with Absalom and have peace with his opposing force. What is our attitude towards our opposing forces? Maybe they're an opposing force and they're powerful and they're resistful, but what if your attitude towards them could be to that of peace as soon as they're willing to reconcile? Are we holding the finger to the trigger, if you will, in some situations in our life because we just have an attitude that they don't even think about approaching me about resolution? That's not on my radar right now. And we present ourselves that way sometimes. And maybe the other party gets to a point where they think, you know what, I got to do right by so-and-so. But I know, without a doubt, they won't have it. And then they get softened in their heart for a couple weeks, and then that softness kind of glazes over again, and they're back on, and you're back. You know, if somebody would just say, man, let's reconcile. Have mercy on my sister or brother so-and-so, Lord. Help us reconcile. So now let's read Psalms chapter 3. It's a short psalm. That's why you've got to kind of understand what's going on in 2 Samuel. But let's listen to what he says here. And this is written, and a lot of this, I think it's somewhat obvious, but a lot of times we've come in here and said this was written at such and such a time. I don't know if we always know for sure, but it sure sounds like it, that this was written after or right around this conflict with Absalom. Okay? So, Psalm chapter 3 and in verse 1, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom his son. That's a man dub in there, but I think it's pretty accurate. But the psalm starts in verse 1. O Lord, how many are my foes? Okay, so when Absalom first starts to pursue David, he says, hey, I'll get 12,000 men and pursue him. That was one advice. The other guy said, no, man, you get the entire people of Israel and you go after David. And that's what he did. Okay, so I have to kind of keep filling you in with details. He sends out spies and people in every tribe, sending it going, hey, I'm pursuing David. I'm overthrowing. You know, he's trying to get, so David doesn't have 10 or 12,000. He's got thousands upon, I don't even know the number. I don't know if we could ever calculate who actually got the word from the spies or what, but it was larger than 12,000 from my understanding of 2 Samuel 15 through 18, because Absalom said, no, we won't go after him with 12,000. We'll go after him with Israel, basically. Now, you can correct me on that if you see that differently, but I think that's what you see. I think it's greater than 12,000. In number, all right? And David says, many are my foes. Many are rising against me. Have you ever had anybody oppose you? It just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel, I was watching something the other day with the kids, a movie, and it's the Lego movie. It's a cartoon animated movie. But there's a great principle that I wanted them to see about Emmett. When Emmett thinks all of his friends are his friends, and he's, you know, he's being told he's the special, and he's gonna put the craggle lid on the glue, you know. But they show video footage to him. And you talk about hurtful information. They show Emmett. He said, "Oh yeah, my friends, they know. They said, yeah, we talk to your friends. We know who you are." And they all said, "Oh yeah, he's just an everyday guy." And one guy even said, "There's nothing special about him." And you see the character just kind of melt. And I told the kids, I said, I want you to look at that right there. I said, that may sound like something small, but those are damaging words. If you ever hear someone say, oh, so-and-so, she's not worth anything. He's a worthless Christian. Now, if it's true, we got to work on that. But if it's something we could have stopped from voicing, it's a lot more helpful to that person. That's hurtful. Yes.
About this rising against me, if it's your own family, or if it's the family of God, that just is much different than just something that this was his own family.
That's right.
And in the family of God, the person should come to you, and so it should be the family. But in both situations, this uprising is far more devastating.
Yeah, it's deep-rooted. I mean, these are people that should be with you when there's opposing forces. So let's make sure that we're not jumping on the opposing force and, oh, yeah, Tommy, Victor, yeah, he, you know, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, Tommy, have you talked to Victor about that, man? He's a good guy. I don't know what's happening, you know, whatever. Don't fuel the fire. This is tough on David. He knows the enemies are upon him, and they just keep rising. He's having to run. He thought he was kind of far enough away. A messenger comes to him and says, hey, before nightfall, you got to get across the river. You got to get gone, bro. They are coming. He sent messengers. Everyone knows they're on the look for you. And he knows that. He knows that stacking up. Many are rising against me. Don't rise against our brothers and sisters in Christ, is what Tommy's point was there. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. What has David done before? He slayed Goliath. He came down among a fearful people and said, I'm not going to listen to somebody disdain my God like that. He was heroic to the point that they said, Saul has slayed his thousands and David his what? 10,000s. That didn't go well with Saul, did it? Okay? He has been victorious in his life. I think sometimes, even if somebody has done something wrong, and you've got rightful cause, if you will, to be opposing them, why don't you stop and remember what they have done? Can you get your head out of the ditch of whatever the mess is and stick your head up and maybe look back in history a little bit and go, man, that brother or sister helped me at such and such time. Or they did this for so and so. I know we got a problem right now, but they've got some bad. David can't even, he says, people were even saying to me, you don't even have a chance for salvation from God. You're a horrible person. What did David do? What has David done for Absalom to be doing this to him? I don't see any, I just see Absalom trying to rise up and press back. Yes, sir. I think he's feeling hopeless.
Maybe you're saying that no way he's getting out.
That's right.
He's going to be, I mean, these armies, like you said, are two people.
That's right.
God can't deliver him out of this.
That's right. I mean, I was in a situation on a job one time, and a guy just didn't want to work for me or anybody. And he had played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a massive man, big dude. And the only thing he knew, his name was Smiley. You can call me Smiley. What's your name? Smiley. I mean, he didn't want you to know his real name. We had him on record, but still. And he didn't want to work for me. Big black guy, man. I mean, he could eat me for breakfast. And he was sitting back on a golf cart one time, putting his feet up. He just let me know, bro, you ain't telling me what to do, and I ain't going up on that job. And everybody in the department was hiding behind machines, waiting to watch. He and I, he'd set it all up. He told them all, watch this, I'm going to get this guy. And as I walked out, I could see guys behind trash cans. I just knew guys were just waiting to see me get the lights punched out. And I was like, oh, man, what's going to happen? And I went over and I said, hey, man, it's the third time, direct order. You got to get up. You got to get on your job. And he jumped off that golf cart. And he sprinted around that golf cart. And I just went right at him like I was going to whoop his head. And I thought, this is the last day of my life. And I kicked his boots. He kicked my boots. I looked up at him, you know, really high up, and I just laid into him, you know. This is we're on the clock, we're working, I'm working for Chrysler, you're working for Chrysler, you're going to get back on that job. And I said, if you want to handle this physically, I'll meet you out after work at the gate. But right now, we're going to work. I wasn't going to be anywhere close to that gate when we got out of work. I was scared to, I just felt everyone was just waiting to see my fall. It was one of the most, I can paint that picture. I was scared to death. Very minimal. Very, very minimal. But I sense a little bit of the emotions. David feels like everybody's saying, dude, they're trying to kill you. He's going to kill you. You can't run far enough. There's nowhere you can go. You can't hide. You are in a hopeless situation. He was just king moments ago, in theory. I know it's probably taking some time here, but moments ago, he was king. His son was undermining him. And now he says, there's no hope. People feel that there's not even hope for me to survive. But you, O Lord, so in your ditch, in your crevice, in your canyon, in your cave of your challenges, in life, and if I'm the opposing force and I'm doing you wrong, you don't forget God. You don't forget God. Men will fail you. God will never leave you nor forsake you. And David could say, in that moment, but you, I don't care what everybody says about me, they're all counting me out. They don't think I have a spitting chance. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me. You don't forget God. You don't forget where He is. You are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head.
Favorite song.
We sang it at camp last week. And right before I was supposed to get up and do my get fit with the kids, I'm back there crying like a baby. Because I've had the Lord hold my head. I've had the Lord shield about me in ways that I didn't know you could feel. I haven't been in David's situation. I've been in other situations where things were stacking up against me, and even physically my life was at risk. And God will shield you. Men were doing me a lot of good. A lot of you were doing me more good than I ever knew people could even do for someone. But God was a shield around David. And I've felt somewhat of what that's like. He says, you lift my head. Absalom wants to cut my head off. He wants to take my head and show it to the nation. But you, God, you lift my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and He answered me from His holy hill. You remember where God is. He's holy. Now, He can't get down in there and dwell with you in a sinful situation. He tells us that. He says, I can't dwell with darkness. I'm the light. I'm holy. I'm on a holy hill. You want to get out of your sinful situation, God's right there with you. He can't dwell with you in sin. Sometimes we get ourselves in situations, and we got ourselves in situations. We did. We've made decisions. We've made sinful choices. And we're saying, well, wonder where God is. I'm like, bro, He doesn't dwell down there. You got to get out of that sinful, miry mess. God will be with you, and He'll lift you up. But you got to let Him know you're going to live and be holy. David knew God's on the holy hill. I'm hiding in this physical hill. But God, who is holy, He's holding me up. He's keeping me together. I had a lady from my gym emailing me some stuff or messaging me this week about this stuff called maca root. Never heard of it. You know, so, I mean, you've been really killing it in the gym and getting your fitness on. She's like, I've been taking this maca root. I was like, what is that stuff? I want some, you know. And she's telling me about it, and she's told me all these benefits of it. And then she's a really spiritually minded lady, and I wrote back. She said all the benefits, and I said, and one of them was balance. It gives you balance in life. I said, sounds like this is similar to Jesus. You know, He can do a lot of good for you too. And she said, you're exactly right. It has. She says, I'm trying to get both of those things taken care of, physical and spiritual. David understood, though he's walking in a physical life, he has a spiritual king on a holy hill. Don't you forget God. Don't quit on God because I quit on you. Don't quit on God because, in your opinion, the whole church has quit on me. It might feel that way because maybe we're not doing our job. But that's right. You remember where God is. God's still with you, okay? David says, I lay down and slept. I awoke again. For who sustained me? What's he say? For the Lord sustained me. You ever been in situations in life where you can't sleep? Been so nervous or fearful that you just can't sleep? I have been there. And you try your best to lay down. David says, man, even in among this turmoil, I can lay down and sleep. You don't sleep long when people are chasing you to kill you. I don't think so. But David says, because God is in His holy hill and He's lifting my head up. Sometimes in life, it's just like this. I mean, I get it. We get like that. He says, God's lifting my head up. He says, I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid, for many thousands. So there's where I get confirmation that it was a lot of people. For many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around. Arise, O Lord. Save me, O my God. For you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people. David was in a situation that I hope none of us are ever in. However, I hope all of us can evaluate David's situation and make some application to similar challenges in our life when you just want to quit. For every reason you could justify among men, maybe you have justifiable reasoning to say, well, this is why I'm just going to quit. David was there, but he did not quit on his faith and his trust in God and in God's ability to help him through this situation, to the point that he still is forgiving of Absalom at his death. He's not celebrating, finally, my enemy fell on their face and they got what they deserve. He's not in any way acting like that at all to the opposing force. He is in every way humble, wanting mercy for Absalom. He's sorry for his son's death. He asked that the men be merciful to him. One fella tried to honor that. Another took warrior mentality and wanted the victorious. I got him. I knocked down the enemy. Maybe that needs to be our attitude towards Satan and some outside forces. But may it never be our attitude towards our brothers and sisters in Christ, even in opposition. Opposition's going to happen. It's going to happen. My dad's been preaching in the same place for 39 years or something like that. Maybe it's 40 now, because he was driving and hauling me back and forth until I was 2 years old. So maybe it's 40. And there's times when he wants to get out of there. He's had it with the people, you know. And then there's times when I've had it with other people in my life when he says, son, there's people at the next church, there's people at the next place, there's humans everywhere you go. And there's times when I tell him, Dad, there's humans at the next church. You need to stay where you are, man. We go back and we kind of throw that back and forth to each other. You told me you've worked it out before. I'm sure you can work it out again. At times where you just want to pack up and get out. And then months later, I can be back over there and everybody's fired up. Everything's going. You can iron out through your problems. I think sometimes, I don't know why, we just think that's not an option. You do me wrong, we're done. Closed door, I'm out. That is so not biblical. And that is so outside of God that it's embarrassing that that's even something that we would participate in. The reconciliation attitude of David in this passage, especially 2 Samuel, is just amazing. Yes. That's right. That's right. How many people do you think among the children of Israel got information from Absalom's men and said, well, that David, I can't believe he's who, you know. I guarantee you there were people who were just taking that information and they turned against David without any kind of information to solidify. Don't do that. Don't do that. If you value someone and you value God and his people, you don't turn your opinion on her or him because of what he or she said about them. You go verify that information. Don't just up and go, oh man, we're all against so-and-so. David. That's right.
Absalom killed one of the brothers, the raping sister, and then Absalom chasing him. So David knew. David had an understanding long before this started to fall apart that this was consequential of some of his sins.
That's right. Absolutely.
God told him that was through Nathan, that was in his future.
That's right. When I was talking with counselors in camp last week, some other thing, I was just really hammering on the response of righteous living. And I've wore this list out probably twice, but I just want you to think about these things. Looking at David and just kind of asking some questions about who we are. And just think of the response of the roar of a crowd. I told you guys I was the kickoff this summer and no one shook their keys. I thought you guys were going to start shaking your keys and getting all excited about class, and you didn't do that. I thought you were going to stop in the middle class and text Derek, man, this is awesome. I didn't see you guys doing that, but that's okay. But the roar of a crowd, you ever seen somebody respond to the roar of a crowd? I have. I have literally thought, ain't no way we got a chance to beat these guys. And you might still get beat by those guys, but for some time period, you can get in your heart, we can do this, man. And I've been in the huddle and had to look at guys and say, hey, man, do you hear that? I know what that scoreboard says, but do you hear what they're thinking of us? We got to do. We got to at least get in the end zone one time before the night's over, or whatever the situation. We got to do something to punch this enemy in. We got to show them. The roar of a crowd. Your favorite song plays. I won't go into details about that, but I saw a guy drop his bike, and I mean get down to a song the other day with his earbuds in. A pat on the back, words of encouragement to a down person. Giving someone a second chance. Did David give Absalom in his heart a second chance? You better believe it. Absalom was too foolish to reconcile with one of the greatest men that God's ever had before us and recorded information. Absalom wouldn't do it. Don't be a fool. I've got a friend of mine, he posted a few months back a picture sitting with his mom. I knew him. I went to high school with him, and at that time I saw him with his mom. I didn't know anything had happened. And he was telling all of those who saw his post to reconcile with your family. He said, this is the first time I've sat in the living room with my mother in over 8 years over some stupid argument 8 years ago when I was living a sinful life. 8 years. He says, I blew 8 years. We didn't talk. We didn't communicate. We live in the same town. And it just sort of like this situation, there was major friction. And he was saying, please reconcile with your family. He said, today feels so good that my mother and I have reconciled. If you've got something that's hanging in your home, in your family, among the Lord's people, see David's attitude towards reconciliation. Have mercy on the lives and the hearts and the souls of those in our midst. Simply having confidence in someone's ability to manage through adversity, looking at David. How did he manage? He didn't go to a self-help group. He didn't have any online resources. He had a relationship with God. Now, I understand a lot of us can benefit from a lot of resources that are out there. He did have some loyal people. We talk about the friends of Job that came, whether they did him good or did him damage. David had some men that said, hey man, I'll stay. He said, no, you go. You go back and you go back to the king, to Adam. And he would reference him as if he was kind of letting him be the authoritative figure, Absalom, that is. But he did have some loyal men. We need loyal people. We need God, but we need some loyal people, and God expects some loyal people to do some of this work. I have benefited from that. I've shared with you before. God was great in my life, but God's people were awesome. God, I'm not taking God out of the picture. I'm just saying you, especially here, acting and doing what God, were loyal to a person who didn't know what was coming next. It's powerful to have loyal people who believe in your positive ability. Believe in the positive ability of your brothers and sisters. Believe in yourself through the connection you have with God. I think our time is up, but some amazing stuff. Read 2 Samuel 15 through 18. Kind of get all that chronologically tied together. I tried to snapshot it as best we can, but never lose sight of the shield that is about us through God our Father. But be men and women who can support and help each other as we make this effort to overcome the adversities in our lives. And do not become opposing forces to our family in the Lord. Thank you very much.